Today we play golf.
Let me show you how we do it in the pros.
Welcome to Behind the Golf Brand Podcast.
I never miss with the 7-iron.
A conversation with some of the most interesting innovators and entrepreneurs behind the biggest names in golf.
My friends were the golf clubs. I lived on the golf course. I lived on the driving range.
From pro talk.
You should learn something from each and every single round you play in.
To fun from on and off the green.
Why would you play golf if you don't play it for money?
Just let me put the ball in the hole.
This is Behind the Golf Brand Podcast with Paul Liberatore. Behind the Golf Brand Podcast is sponsored by On Point, the revolutionary three-dimensional domed golf ball marker. On Point provides alignment recognition as small as a degree of inaccuracy from the planned course of the putt face angle. Endorsed by Jim Furyk, U.S. Open champion and 17-time PGA Tour winner, On Point alignment technology has been proven to increase putting performance and help lower your score. Visit onpointgolf.us and be sure to use code GA10 for a 10% discount. On Point, make more putts.
What's up, guys? Paul from Golfers Authority. Welcome to the Behind the Golf Brand Podcast. This week, I have a good friend of mine, a legend in the training and mental game, and also the part of the mind, I would say, or part of the brain of the new TPT shafts. TPT Golf is one of the hottest shaft brands, like literally blowing up right now. I've been really lucky to test some of their shafts. They're amazing. And I'm really excited to have John Sinclair on the show today to talk about his career, about what kind of how he grew up in the golf game, and then about the TPT shaft. So I'm really excited to talk about this today because, you know, I think he's the first shaft company I've had on the show, even though I work with all the shaft companies. So it's really kind of cool because I feel like shafts are, they don't get the treatment they deserve in a golf club, really. They're like, everyone thinks about the head. So without further ado, welcome to the show.
Well, I appreciate you having me. We've been trying to do this for a while.
I know, right? Like 2 months.
Yeah.
You're busy though, man. You're training. You're meeting with players. You're busy, man. I mean, I'm just excited to have you here. So where are you located?
In the DFW area, right by the airport in a city called Euless. So it's right in between Dallas and Fort Worth and a city called Euless. And I'm on a golf course called Texas Star. So my building's on the back of their driving range.
Oh, that's cool. Mm-hmm. So are you in your studio then right now? Looks like
I am.
That's a nice studio. I like
this. This is the, this is my, the putting area of the second bay. And then I have a, you know, on that side, we can still hit out. And then the other room over there, we have a, my main teaching bay and then offices on the other side. So it's a nice little building that we built here. And we're thankful that the city of Euless allowed me to build this place. And I've been here for 13 years and probably be here until I retire.
Yeah. I love it for reals because I guess my, like I'm in my garage, right? But it looks pretty.
It's a nice garage.
Yeah. It's called COVID garage. That's what happens. You know, if you're stuck at home. I'm like, I'm going to finish my garage and not park in there anymore. I have a big garage. So like I made half my garage into like a studio and golf area. I don't have enough room for a simulator though. My wife will let me do that. I'm trying though. But I think my dream is to have a studio like what you have at a golf course and like rent one out. Or I don't really know how they do that, but you know, like that's like kind of Rick Shields does it on YouTube. Like he has his own steel bay and it's like, that'd be sick. That'd be really cool. But yours looks nice. I was just like, whoa, that's probably the nicest backgrounds I've seen of most people. They're just like, oh yeah, I'm in my office, you know?
Yeah, this is nice. So we painted it up and if I show you the other side right now, it's a mess. If you look,
me
the other
too.
Way, I got shafts everywhere, and
you'll see bicycles and you know a trash can like over the corner. But so, what's your first golf memory? Like, how long have you been, like playing? Like, what do you remember as your first time?
Shoot, my first golf memory, think back is I was my best friend when I was small. I don't even remember the age, but you know, fairly small, certainly in single digits. He played golf and I didn't play golf. And there was no way I was going to let him play golf and then me not play golf. So I remember he belonged to a club there in Dallas. We called it Glen Lakes. And so I got to start playing there at Glen Lakes. And that was lucky enough. That's where Trevino was at the time.
And really? Holy.
So we got to watch him a lot. And really the relationship from there still to this day, you know, I still, you know, see him occasionally and get to talk to him. And
really,
and
he still plays over there?
No, well, Glen Lakes is gone now, but probably I see him at different places that I go. You know, that he still bounces around here in Dallas at different clubs. I'll run into him, and he's out at Palm Springs a lot. So I go out there quite often, and I'll run into him out there or some places, just different places. And still, we still chat even to this day. He's still very giving of his time when I see him, just to chat with him for a little bit. And so he's always just been awesome. So that's, you know, he's the first golf memory of a pro of me watching hit balls.
Like a real pro. Like,
whoa. Right. Like, right. And he didn't mind if we sat there and watched him. And unlike some, but you just sit back there and watch him.
Such a different time, right? Like,
oh, yes.
Like, I wish it was like that now. Now it's like you have handlers. It's a business now. And before.
Yeah. It's this big bubble, you know, they keep you at bay, which, you know, and I understand being, you know, a tour coach too is you got to keep all that back noise from the player just for the distraction, you know, used to now with the day and all the different social media, you know, the time demand is really huge on these players. So
they're always pretty on much camera. They're always on camera, right? Like
always. Right.
It wasn't like that 20 years ago.
No, they could escape.
Even if people were there watching them, they weren't recording them. It wasn't going to be live and be like, oh, so-and-so is doing a bad job with the range today, you know, and everyone.
That's right.
They'd just be like, no one knew, but maybe some kids watching them.
Yeah. I think he touched that ball. I know he touched that ball. You know, that ball moved, you know, maybe one dimple or something. Like, oh my God.
So when you, did you like play in high school and then in college and like did the whole thing or?
I played in high school.
Yeah.
Berkner High, graduated 80. Three, I think, the dates me pretty good, and didn't really care much for college. I was more of an outdoors guy, so I had a chance I could have played at a couple places and just turned it down, and really just wanted to go work. So, and I wanted to be a professional golfer, and the way I could do that was go earn money and work, and then
play.
And then I could go play. So, I became like an electrician and HVAC license, a plumbing license.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, so by, you know, when I was 20, I was an electrician. So I worked for a company and then met my wife and got married and woke up one day and I said, it's time to go play golf. And that was in 1991 or something like that. I think that was, and 92 maybe. And started playing professional golf and learned a lot about clubs and stuff like that. And then, and I remember I wake up in 2000 and said, I don't want to do this anymore. I'm sick of traveling and going to all these places and seeing golf courses. So one of my goals was to, you know, see all the states in the USA and to go to all the different continents. So we set out on that little trek. And so I've been to all the 50 states now, and I've seen things instead of just playing golf in these places. And, you know, here in Texas, we got great golf courses. So if I want to go play golf, I can play golf here. And then I'm at one of the best golf courses in Texas now. So as far as the public facilities, so, you know, I can go play here. Even when I'm on the road now, people, oh, right, you went to Augusta or you went to here, you went to there. And I'm like, yeah, I was on the driving range. There's grass, it's a tree.
Yeah, that's you're really not there. You're not on vacation. Yeah, it's not no. Like you're, yeah.
Because you're working. I go to cool places, yeah. I go down to, I visit my buddy, Jeff Leisman a lot in Florida, and he's at this great golf course, Dive Preserve. And I think I've been on the actual course like one time, the front nine or something, and the rest of, and we've known each other for, I don't know, 12 years or 13 years. I've been working together with him, and most time I just see his driving range and then I fly home. So that's not fun. I want to go and, you know, look at the places, see the different things. And now experience, I think, it. Yeah, I've got two continents left. And Antarctica. My wife only has the one. Antarctica is one of them. We're trying to plan that one out. And then Australia. She's been to Australia. I haven't.
I love been, Australia. So you were an electrician. And then, like, were you, like, playing like just for fun? Or were you doing, like, pro-am stuff? Or were you doing, you know, like, amateur?
Oh, when I was working, I was certainly, yeah, I was still playing and playing amateur stuff. And, you know, I always loved golf. That's what I wanted to do. So I just had to
make enough money. Yeah, but you had to provide the family and make money. And yeah.
Yeah, I had to make enough money to you know, to actually do it on my own. I didn't want to sponsor or anything like that. So, you know, just saved and saved and saved. And as soon as I got fully vested in the company that I was working for, I said, well, see ya. It's time to go. And cashed it out. And, you know, we just went and played golf. Then when I quit playing, we built a driving range here in Cleburne, Texas. And real tin cup kind of a thing. And
you really built a driving range?
Yeah, 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 yeah. We bought some land there.
So you and your wife, or you and your partners, or what?
No, just me and my wife. And at the time, my dad was still alive. And so I said, well, would you come and help us? And he was just kind of retired and messing around. And that's the sad part about it. We built it. And then just when we opened it, he passed away. And so that all that fell on us. So we had to do everything for 7 years and teach and pick the balls. And we sold tons of clubs out of this little, literally it was a 12 by 12 shack. I mean, 10 cups place was pretty nice compared to what we were dealing with. I probably had better grass than he did, but he had a nicer building. But that's
so like, you're like a tough shed. You're like doing like literally.
Yeah. It was like a little barn shed.
Did you have AC in there or no?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Or swamp cooler.
Yeah. Little window unit that we had in there. And I remember
it's hot in Texas.
Yeah. Very hot.
Yeah.
The Callaway rep, I remember the first time, and we've become great friends to this day, but he came by to close me down. And he pulls up to the little shed, and it's this little white building. And he's like, you know, Callaway can't be in here. This is ridiculous. And he walks in, and we got like $40,000 worth of inventory. And he looks at the sales, and he's like going, holy cow. And so we've been friends every time because we were selling the crap out of golf clubs there.
Why? So, why do you think that is?
Maybe I was good at it.
You're honest. Yeah, you're a straight shooter. And you're recommending stuff that actually worked for people and not.
Yeah. And I was willing to, we invested in the demos, you know, back then you had glued in heads. So, you know, I might have 15 drivers of one brand with different shafts in it to try and really do the fittings the way I felt was proper. And I would go down and learn. And the time when I was playing golf, I would go in the vans to the club builders and talk to them and try to figure stuff out. So I was always interested in learning and figuring this stuff out. And that just led me down that road to fitting. And I could see as I started teaching that if that club's not right, why do I want to fight it as a coach? You know, and I still have that to this day. You know, somebody comes in here for lessons. If the club's not right, we're going to get you a new club, or I'm not going to teach because I'm not going to sit here and teach you a swing that would be good with a club that doesn't work, you know, for that swing. You know, we feel like, you know, and my friend Colin Swatton, who's Jason Day's coach forever, he says that, you know, I need you to have a race car to drive on the NASCAR track. I don't, you know, you're not going to win in a VW. So at least let's have a finely tuned car that you can drive and use your skills, you know, to win. So the old adage of, you know, tour pros can hit anything just doesn't, it's not right. You know, yeah, they'll figure stuff out. They'll get it around the golf course, but they're, you know, that engine's missing a few cylinders. But when you can get them the proper club and the proper shaft and the proper putter and the proper everything, then that's when you know that at least the car is good. Now, if you go drive, then we can work more on the little nuances of the swing or their mental capacity to get through four rounds and win a golf term.
So you quit the HVAC company, or you retired from whatever.
Well, it was all one company I was working for.
Yeah,
it was it was a catering company, and still love them to this day. It was called Industrial Catering. We had like 500 trucks.
Oh my God.
So there was five of us in the maintenance idea, and there was a carpenter there. I was electrician. There's HVAC guys, welders and stuff like that. And we all worked as a team, and we build these places, build the boxes that you see driving around to all the industrial plants. And it was like self-contained. So we really got a chance to learn all kinds of stuff. And if we just wanted to build something, we'd just make it up. So we had a full machine shop, and it was like probably one of the best places for anybody to ever work as a young person to go in there and have learn. The freedom to learn and make mistakes. Yeah. And, you know, when you screwed
mentorship, up, you're kind of, especially in that world. Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I tell you,
right. And we, you know, we worked our rear ends off, and I learned a ton, and I learned a ton from the other guys I was working with, and hopefully they learned a little something from me. And, you know, that I studied a lot, you know, going to school at night for being an electrician. I didn't want to go to college. That's funny. And then I'm probably one of the most educated people outside of college of different trades, you know, and they get into shafts. I like to learn what I want to learn, not necessarily what somebody tells me they
need. I think college is overrated, man. I'm being straight. Like, I went to college, I went to law school. I was like, I had a conversation with somebody. I'm like, if I was 20 years younger, I would be like, I wouldn't have done any of that crap. But like, you learn by doing. College just gives you opportunity. That's it, right? It just opens a door. I don't know. That's my opinion.
Well, I think that's probably true. I mean, having that degree helps. Not having a degree sometimes, you know, keeps me from being to go do something, but probably something I don't want to do anyway. But
no, you don't want to do it.
but certainly just being able to have learned all different kinds of trades and going,
I love it.
I think it gives me pretty balanced. And, you know, unfortunately, it also means that I'm the guy that's got to always fix the lights. I can't just call anybody. And
that's me. So like I went to college and I used to be a pilot, right? But I was like, if I want to be a pilot, I need to know how to be an airplane mechanic too, because if something breaks, I want to know what's happening and how to fix it or whatever. Mm-hmm. So like when I graduated college, I ended up getting my mechanics rating for being an airplane mechanic. So I'm the same way. Like I'm a nerd, you know, I want to learn stuff. I want to know how things work. So that's just like me.
Yeah. I'm definitely going to tear apart your TV and check it out. That's I would definitely do that. I'm not afraid to do it.
I'm afraid to put it back together.
Well, I'll you know, I like the putting back together part.
That's the hard part. Cause you're like, oh, where's
gotta see if it
come
can
from?
Make it work. Yeah. See if we can make it work.
You know what my favorite YouTube channel is? I just found this guy. I think it's interesting. I don't watch a lot of YouTube, but like I have been lately. This guy will take like old electronics and he'll like refurbish the old electronics. It's like a 30-minute video, like an old Nintendo or an old, and it's like it looks brand new when it's done. And I'm like, holy crap. And he gets millions of views. I'm like, yeah, because every person out there is like, that's what I wish I could just go do. Like he'll break it down to all the components and clean them and like, I don't know. It's just really cool. It's interesting. He's some German guy or something. I don't really know. But that's so cool. You had your own driving range. Did you sell it or what happened to it?
Yeah, we sold the property and they were going to turn it into something. I don't even know. I haven't been back
probably,
there.
Probably houses.
Yeah, I don't know if they were going to. They were going to put little cabins and stuff on there because we had a nice little pond. We had 52 acres. And they put some horses on there and they did some different things. But I hardly ever drive by there. So I don't even know what they actually ended up doing. But so, yeah. And then, you know, they had some oil and gas. So we kept the minerals, thank goodness on that. So they put a gas.
Are you getting paid on that still? The oil and gas?
Oh, no, that's all that gets shut down pretty quick. That's a pretty quick, you know, it was nice to get it, you know,
for like a couple of years, if that, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And then it's gone. And then,
you know, the biggest pain in the ass is, I'll tell you right now, like, cause I do a lot of like trust and estate stuff and I'll have these clients that pass away and I have all these mineral and gas rights in like Oklahoma or Texas. That's like the biggest pain in the ass to get that retitled. Like, because it's like a one millionth share, you know, of an underground right. And they make like $14 a year and it's going to cost them like $5,000 for us to get that thing transferred. I'm like, just let it go. You know, like, but they could find more oil and gas or something. Like, no, it's tapped out. Like, just deal with it. Like, it's okay. Yeah. It's not even worth trying to get. So then when did you really start getting into the mental game? Or is that something that you...
That happened when I was playing and met Dr. Graham and John Stabler, 1997. And they were... Actually, I did better in my last 3 years of playing professional. Made more money than I ever did in the first 4 years.
Shut up. For real?
Yeah. Yeah. Because she, you know, and John helped me understand. I mean, you know, here I was a really good ball striker. I would hit it great and then, you know, make 8 birdies and shoot even par. And, you know, good. That's great if you want to gamble, you know, but that's not so good if you want to win tournaments. And so they taught me how to think better, how to control my emotions better, and just what do champions actually do? What is their
Tiger,
thought process?
Right? Like Tiger shuts it all right out. Like,
and they actually have a system that you can be tested in a simple personality profile. You've probably taken something similar. And she earned her doctorate and wrote her thesis on this study And that's how she earned her doctorate. And it was on golf. And so she tested me and I got really interested.
Yeah, like the most mental game there ever been made, right? Like the promotion. I mean, I can't.
Right. Well, she found eight traits that the champions hit in the 95th percentile. So eight personality traits that all these champions on tour had. And they were thinking a certain way that was different than your average PGA tour player. The comparison was done only on tour players. And she started on the LPGA and then 88 and 89 went to the senior PGA and the PGA, and the results were the same. So it didn't matter if you're male or female. The thought process remained the same. And so I got super interested in that. And when I decided to teach, the first thing I wanted to do is become an instructor. And so I still laugh because I say I'm their apprentice now of, what is it now, 20, whatever, I don't even know what year it is, 21. So 24 years now, I'm still learning from them. I'm one of their master instructors. I think there's three of us in the world that have reached that level. And so that's kind of how I got involved in the mental game. And I think I'm a mental game coach first, and then I'm a technical coach second. Although most people know me because I have this huge database of professional players in my 3D AMM system. So I've been looking at, you know, three-dimensional swing stuff since, I guess, 2007-ish, when we did the beta testing for the AMM with Dr. Phil Cheatham. So it's kind of just been a transfer over to, most of the people knew me from 3D when I was always a mental coach first.
Don't you have a course, like a mental game course?
We put players through it. We call it the, it's a level one school where a player would come in on a Friday night and they'd stay the weekend, and it's about 14 hours. I don't have time to do those so much anymore. But when John and I were working on these schools, we wanted to be able to coach it and teach it very similarly. We obviously both have our different styles, and I come from a playing background and he's from the business and the psychological background of it. So that part, you know, we have our own styles, but I can easily send my players down to San Antonio, Bernie, Texas, and know that that's going to be good. And when they come back up here, they're ready to go. And so I just don't have enough time to do it.
Only so many hours in the day.
Yeah. And the weekend that, you know,
What's that course you have on your website though? Like the John Sinclair website. Is that like the mental game? Like they did like a video course or something?
I have a wrist angle video. No, that the one on my actual website's a wrist angle video. And then yes, the mental course would be on there as well. And it's still advertised on there. But usually if you call me, I'll say, look, you know, John has one every month. If I put it together, we got to find six people and go through it. And I really don't have, I don't have any weekends off until Christmas. I think right now it's September. Yeah. Is the next time I have a weekday. And that'll be full before we get to September. So,
Because you're meeting with guys and gals that are trying to either on the tour or Korn Ferry or Symetra or LPGA, like you're meeting with, like you're busy as hell, right? Like,
yeah. And then you got
TPT on top of it.
TPT. Yeah. On top of all that, I do all the beta testing for them and all that. So, you know, but I have handicapped guys in here from, 30 handicap ladies to guys down to scratch amateurs too. I'm not just a tour coach. It's probably fairly equal, to be honest, the pros to the amateurs. So it's probably a 50-50 split. But I still enjoy it. You know, I had a guy in here yesterday that, broke 70 or not broke 70, broke 80 for the first time, shot in the 70s. And he's 65
so
years old.
So
oh
happy.
Yeah. And that's
a lifelong goal, right? Like,
yeah. That's right.
That's a big deal. Yeah.
That was a huge deal for him. And, I have a player one of my players win the Korn Ferry Tour last week, and both of them were just as excited. So it's just as cool, that he shot his, 78 that one day of his life, and he's learning.
I'd be so happy. I'd be.
Yeah. and then of course, on a bigger scale, then earning your PGA Tour card is a pretty big deal. Right. So, those types of things. But if you put the players, their emotional feelings that they have from succeeding on this goal is probably exactly the same.
Exactly the same.
And the gratification
of
that
you,
get
yeah, of is, the coach, right? Like
it's pretty. This, yeah, it's gratifying on both sides.
You know, you did a good job. You know, like
one you might get a little notoriety for, and the other one nobody will ever know. But it feels good.
It feels the same way, but both. Right. Because you, right. No, I. Oh, it's like a teacher, right? You're a teacher at heart, and it's like, you know, when somebody achieves their goal or learns something new, that's huge, right? I mean, So tell me about the 3D stuff, like when you started it. What's it called? AMA system?
AMM.
MMM, yeah.
Advanced Motion Measurement. Yeah, that's still, in my opinion, the gold standard in 3D collection. There's some other things out there now, but I got involved in that. It's a pretty simple thing. I started the driving range, like we talked about, and I was the guy that would go in there. I don't need cameras. I don't need this. I can see all this stuff with my eyes. And I was teaching people, and the truth is, and teaching some stuff, probably terrible information, but your passion and I still tell this to young teachers today. If you believe in your ability and you have passion, the clients are going to get better. You know, they're going to feed off of that. So if you're wrong, sometimes it's okay. Placebos work anyway. So especially in golf. So as you're learning, you know, I just didn't feel like I needed that. And then I went over, I was at Jim McClain's when he built this place in Texas for a little while and got introduced to cameras for the first time. I was like, well, that makes kind of life easier. And then I started looking at these two-dimensional cameras. I go, golly, you know, that's just, I don't see the golf swing that way. And I thought, am I wrong? You know, and I started getting confused. It's like, because it doesn't look like what I see, you know, when I look at look at your face right now, that doesn't look like what I truly see in my mind and different things. And then I was introduced to a gentleman there at the McLean Center called Dr. Rob Neal. And he's a 3D specialist. And at that time, we used a system, his system, that was a snap-align system. So what that means is when you measure something out, you stand still and you're supposed to stand at attention and you hit the button and it zeroes everything out, right? So I didn't really understand that at the moment. And I've collected quite a bit of data on that machine. And one day I'm sitting there and I had some ladies in there. And I could see on the screen, I could see her reflection. And as I hit the zero button, she was standing funny. And all of a sudden I saw on the screen, she zeroed out. And I was like, uh-oh, you know, how many times did that happen? You know, where now her body's, the only way she could look good on the screen is to stand weird. So, you know, that one bothered me. Do you understand kind of what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so
yeah,
if I have my arm like that and I hit the zero button, the screen looks like that. And when my arm looks like that.
Yeah, like so, that. Yeah, that's all right.
And it was just like, all right, I didn't investigate this enough. And, you know, Dr. Rob Neal is one of the smartest, you know, doctors out there in biomechanics. And so I started investigating and he then started changing to what we call digitizing. And he only does the upper body. He doesn't do the legs. And I kept pushing. I want to see the legs. I want to see the whole body. You know, legs are only 20%. That's a big 20% in my opinion. A
lot of muscle in there too.
And somehow or another, I think maybe he directed me or I don't even remember how it happened, but I got introduced to Phil Cheatham, who's now Dr. Phil Cheatham. And so I went out there to see him and he does the whole body, you know, same system that Dr. Neal had, except he would do the whole body. And I started really investigating on how these things work. So we go back to the original thing. I'm going to start tearing apart this machine until I figure out how it works. Now that I've seen that something wasn't exactly right, the two-dimensional camera, then I saw the snap-align system not exactly right. I was going to make sure that the next time I had it as right as I could get it. And he was doing a beta testing. So I was all in. I'm like, okay. And he gives me this AMM machine, which I bought. And I'm now all into technology. You know, at this point, I went from, I don't want to do anything to the 3D system was the way that I would see the golf swing. You know, it wasn't 2D, it was 3D. I was seeing in 3D and I'm trying to look at a two-dimensional, you know, thing. And I see all these, you know, YouTube things at that time or books and they're going through all this stuff. And I said, man, that swing doesn't do that. You know, there's no way that's right.
And that's the way it looks.
Right. And so I went out there and I actually bought a AMM system, 3D.
But that cost?
TrackMan.
Oh,
back then I think it was
$1 billion.
Yeah, no, it was I can only remember 20, maybe 30,000, 25,000. Yeah, but 30,
even
like
TrackMan back then was like two.
I think TrackMan, I remember that one, 27,000 when I bought my first one. So I bought all this in a week and a Sam Putlab.
And your wife's
I traveled
like,
around.
What?
Yeah, so I just went crazy. My wife's going, whoa, what are you doing? I'm like, I got to learn. So I just went
what
out
year was
and got
this?
This
got like 2000, what, four or five?
No, it's maybe six.
Yeah.
Not 100% sure. Somewhere around plus or minus on the six, I think, 2006. And so I just, but Phil showed me how to do it and pretty much said, hey, go capture some players and let me know. And so you have all these graphs and you're looking at all this stuff and I don't even know what the heck I'm looking at. And I'm running the avatar, right? I'm just running the avatar, but basically I'm tearing apart the machine and I'm asking questions. Well, how does that sensor work? You know, where's the information come from? Why is this better? Why is this worse? And so I just started.
You asked the right questions, right?
Right.
And you found the solution too, as part of it.
And so to this day, if I buy technology, it drives them nuts because I want to know how it works before I buy it because I've been duped so many times on stuff that ends up not really working.
That's, yeah.
And so, I mean, I make people mad, you know, because I'm like, no, you need to tell me how it works or I'm not interested.
You don't give me the sales pitch on how it works. I want to know. I want to know.
I want to know how it works. And I'm okay with errors as long as I know them. If I can live with them, fine. If I can't, I'm not going to use the product. So, you know, everything has some amount of error to it because it's not, nothing's perfect. So we just got to get it as best that we can. And so all that's how I got into 3D. And then, you know, I met Jeff Banasak, who's out on tour as a physio. He's a PT, and I started capturing all of his tour players. So that's how it started. So I was working with different coaches and PTs capturing their players to get the data to see how we could help them both with their swing and medically. And
it helps
that's
them
how it
too,
all
right? Because they don't ever have this done. This is like high tech stuff, right? So they're like, right. They're like, oh yeah, sure, we'll do it. You know, like have it helped.
Yeah, and then you know, after a while, I remember one player that I'd captured for probably 12 years. He goes, oh, I remember when I used to look forward to seeing you and now I just hate it because I got to, you know, get all wired up and do all this stuff and it becomes a bother, you know, especially when they made tons of money and their time constraints or, you know, it gets tougher and tougher and everybody thinks, you know, you bring in, you do somebody on 3D every day. I've had, you know, amateurs come in here. I thought you're going to put me on the 3D. I said, are you kidding? I only do that like once a year, unless, you know, there's injuries or something that we just can't see and there's a problem, we put them back on it. But we want to capture you once a year, see where we're at, usually in the off season. And that's how we do it. But people think you go jump in there and you're in 3D every time you take a lesson. Well, that's crazy. Well, number one, I'm a mental coach. And the last thing I need you thinking about is all this mechanics when you're hitting it. And then that gets pretty technical when we're measuring, what, 220 parameters of the body at 240 frames a second. That's a lot of information.
Yeah.
It takes me, it's still, and I'm slower than some others, I'm sure, but it takes me about 3 hours to go through a data collection, you know? So I've still got two sitting on my desk right now that I collected over a month ago and I'm sure they're waiting on me and I hate that, but I make sure I go through every part of the swing before I give my opinion.
It's unbelievable. So what tour players have you done?
I don't ever talk about that. That's up to
all the big ones. All the big ones.
I've got one of the best databases in the world for sure. I know that I have the strongest one, but the I don't you know, if the player wants to say they're here, I know I've been referred to on the TV. We laugh all the time.
Really?
He gets his data collected somewhere in Texas. So my wife and I thought we were just going to put a big sign out.
You should do that out front.
Somewhere
in Texas.
Right. But, you know, I keep all that stuff private. I don't, even when I do my seminars or I go speak and I show the
data. Yeah, you're not trying to name drop. Like, oh, yeah.
No. And I think, that, you know, if somebody wants to sit there and say, hey, I did this with John and this is what we're working on, that's fine. But I don't really like to do that. I think that's privacy of the player. And maybe that's because that's the way I would have felt. You know, I've seen some players that get their 3D data out there, let's say on a YouTube, right? And
I feel violated if I was a tour
player. Well, I mean, they get dissected because, I mean, you can't find a swing that you can't find problems with, but they get so dissected. You know, one, the one that can really handle it, and I can say his name because he won't care, is Grant Waite. You know, we went to Dr. Kwan's. We did the data here. He's released it to the teachers for learning purposes, which is awesome on his part, because he has a great golf swing and all that. But at the same time, he's got the most dissected swing of any pro I've ever seen. And it's not always good. So, you know, I don't need the player hearing a bunch of stuff. I don't need, you know, if I'm the coach, I don't want all that stuff out, you know, floating around of this is my player. And then in this day and time on the YouTube, all you get is criticized more than you get, oh, he's doing a good job.
Oh, everyone has an opinion, right? Everyone has an opinion. Everybody knows everything.
And it cracks me up. Yeah. Well, we're working with a player and then we hear all this stuff that, oh, I could fix this or that with this player. It's pretty funny because they have no idea. They actually have no clue. And,
I get that because
they don't
have
all the information.
He'll be like, oh, I could do that or blah, blah, blah. And it's like, I don't see you doing it. Right. Like, yeah. I'll talk. You know, it doesn't even bother me anymore. Like, there's two types of people. There's people going to hate it or there's people that are just trying to get attention by saying it. You know, and just like, I don't have time for that, whatever.
Yeah, it's just the way it goes now. And so I do try to protect that.
So when did you start working with TPT then?
I believe now it was 5 years ago.
Do they come to you or how that happened?
Yeah, I have another biomechanist that I work with in France, Jean-Jacques Rivet. And we would always meet at the PGA show and just have a 3D, we'd always say meet.
Yeah, your buddies.
Yeah, we'd do too much. You know, we would work together on some of the French players and stuff like that. They're over here in the States. And so we would have Zoom meetings all the time. And then we would meet each other in 3D. We would say once a year at the PGA show. Well, he said, hey, come meet me at the Rosen across from the PGA show. And I said, okay. You know, and so I went over there and he leads me down this hallway, sits me down at these chairs with, you know, these guys and said, we don't need to talk this year. Tapped me on the shoulder and he left. He goes, you need to see them. And I never even saw him. He took off. So I had no idea what they were even there for, but we had discussions with Shafts. He knew how disgusted that I was at that moment with Shafts and how, you know, I'd had a player that Shaft broke and, you know, he played it and we knew it wasn't his swing and we couldn't find that fit again. Like everybody out there that might be watching this knows, they've been to a fitting, they've hit the driver great, and then they get the actual club and it doesn't feel the same. And it just doesn't
happen all the time. Yeah. I mean, I bet.
Yeah. And so that was something that was bugging me. And I was starting to investigate the shafts, and these guys were sitting in front of me and they said, hey, we're making golf shafts. And I'm very skeptical. I have to admit, I was extremely skeptical. And they said, well, we can make this shaft and repeat it and it can feel the same every single time. And I won't say the word, but it was BS. And I got up and I started to walk away. And the CEO of the company stopped me and said, no, we can really, really do it. And so I was like, all right, I'll listen. So after our meeting, I came home and I went and bought these two machines that, you know, I have one, you can measure every centimeter of the shaft, the hoop deformation, everything. And there's only three of them in the world and I have two of them. And so I took some gamer shafts from some PGA Tour players and I measured them and I took the other machine and sent it to Switzerland. And so I could give them the measurements. They could then make a shaft, measure it to be sure that it was the same and then send it back. Well, we did five or six, I think, PGA Tour players. And when I brought the shafts in with the TrackMan on, the player hitting it, they couldn't tell the difference in their game or in the shaft that TPT had made.
Holy crap.
So I was like, that's the coolest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, pretty much, that right? Works. Like ever. Yeah.
Right. And so they asked me, they said, well, you know, are they going to play them? And I said, well, no, that was a backup, but thank you. You know, now we have a backup. That was the whole problem, is now we have a backup. Now we can make the as long as the driver head doesn't crack, you know, we can actually put a shaft in there and it feels just like your gamer. And I said, until they're better, I mean, they got to be better.
Yeah.
And so he said, well, would you help us? And so I started flying back and forth from Switzerland and we developed the first TPT shafts, and it was, they came out straighter. They came out at the time with the blue range. They were actually sometimes a little faster. I'm still not 100% sure why that happened. Possibly because the club's not moving around and wobbling all over the place, and the player just can swing it faster. But we saw that. And so we've now developed it into what's called the red range. And that's the one that's out right now to the public and out on tour. And then we won lots of golf tournaments. I think now over 30 worldwide in the last 2 years, two and a half years, and three this last weekend, players playing that, at least in their driver. And so that was kind of how it started. And then as it developed, then I started, you know, kind of helping design the shaft. And they're using my knowledge in the golf business and their great engineers that they have, because these are Swiss people. I mean, people don't even realize
TPT. Yeah, perfection. Yeah, like,
you know, Northfly Technology, they wanted to win the America's Cup, and they got with Oracle, and they got sales mass, and they won the America's Cup. So this is a big company. And they do, you know, you drive a Porsche and you see the graphite inlays on the car. That's it. Formula One race cars, you know, the boats, the flying ships, the sails, the mast that's dead straight, that goes straight up there for 50 feet. So they're not, you know, this is a serious company. And I think Francois is the CEO, and he told me one time, well, it was either fishing rods or golf shafts. And so they chose, I can't remember exactly why they chose golf shafts, but thankful for us that they did. And so I just went back and forth, and we developed this product. And I'm still, I don't work for TPT, even though I designed the shafts. Obviously, I have some bias towards that. But for my players, especially my tour players that have to make money, I mean, they're going to play the best shaft that they can. Whatever goes along the straightest, I don't care if it's a TPT or it's not a TPT. I still have that philosophy, and I will try anything with them. If it's better, it's better. And I had a discussion with a Korn Ferry player, and he goes, well, I hadn't put my TPT shaft in yet. And I said, that's fine. I said, only if it's better. You know, I mean, only if it's better. And that's how we want it to be. And so I've quit fitting other shafts. I might buy some for the player or something like that to see if something's better, but it's just better. The way it's made, no other company can make them like that. It's wrapped instead of flagged, hand-rolled. It's made through a machine versus a hand-rolled, which is most other shafts out there. It's why they can't repeat it. You know, if you're doing it by hand and you're changing and putting all these different flags to get your EI curve or your stiffness profile, then how do you repeat that when some of those flags don't go all the way around the shaft, or some of them go around a bunch of times and don't always finish in the same spot? Then you get spines in the shafts, and the TPT wraps it, and it's one start, one stop, and then we sand the profiler. So it's more like a milled shaft than it would be for the people out there, than it would be something that's made through a flagging process. And so the consistency of it's through the roof, and control it at one CPM plus or minus all the way up and down the shaft. So that's the frequency of the shaft. So anywhere on that shaft, you give me 20 of them, they're all going to feel the same.
It's crazy.
And the player, and we've, you know, there's nobody's ever not said that feels just like the other. So when you get fit with the TPT shaft, you know, something happens to it. The airline just broke one the other day, and I replaced it, and the guy called me and said, I didn't even know the difference. So tour players, sometimes they want to try a new driver head. It doesn't always work out that their same shaft will work in a different driver head, you know, if it's a different style of brand, or they come out with a new one. So sometimes we have to refit it to get the right shaft and performance for that particular head. But once it's there, it's there. And I've got one senior tour player that we have two different brands, his backup, because he just, both of them work, but they both have two different shafts, but they both perform exactly the same. So it's quite a journey that way once you start to understand it. And it's very different than your normal shafts. And then we've moved into fairway woods now, where we've been able to make a shaft specifically for a fairway wood. And then when you hit it, you're starting to feel like, well, that feels just like my driver. And that feel connection is really something that's been hard to do over the years. And now we've been able to do it. It's not necessarily going to be the same number, like 14 high and 14 high or F14 high. But you will be able to find the shaft that then performs and feels like your driver. And now I'm doing that with hybrids as we speak. And I have hybrids now out on the tour already that they love. So that's kind of awesome. How it all works out.
It's amazing that what you guys are doing, because there's no one really doing that, you know?
No, I don't think anybody can, you know? And I know one engineer that was there looked at it and goes, oh man, I could never have figured this out. So they've got something special. It works great for what I do, you know, to be able to know that somebody comes in here and I fit them in a club. And when they get their club, and actually usually I just make it for them, they walk out the door with it and they test the one I made versus the one they were fit with. And they go, okay, that's good. Sometimes the only differences would be if we use we're using universal tips in the fitting. And then, you know, sometimes the tips are a little different. We have to make the adjustment to the head or something for the tip, but we usually have no problem.
Now, if somebody wants to get fitted for a TPT shaft, though, they have to go to a TPT fitter, right? Like it's not, you can't just go buy them online and put them in yourself, right? Like,
has to be through a fitted. Yeah. Exactly. You have to come to a fitter. You know, that's part of their deal. Cause I found out early on. And if you look at a TPT shaft, you'll notice that they have no flex. They have no information on it other than the label says 14 high or 15 low or something like that.
Yeah.
I didn't want the players to be restricted to what they thought they knew. And so I asked them right away, let's not put that on there because some players might play a stiffer one and some players might play a much more flexible shaft. Because I'm still in the camp of, I would want a player to have a flexible shaft with a low torque. And I found out early on, the reason why most players wouldn't play a more flexible shaft is because the torque was too high when they made it. And so that if that's what they were feeling, players, this is tour players we're talking about, they would feel torque when they would say looseness and they would relate that to the flex of the shaft when they were actually just feeling the torque. It was almost 100%. I think there was one that caught on that knew right away that that's the torque and that's the bend. But the rest of them all would think that, well, this shaft's too loose, you know, is what they would usually say, or too whippy or something like that. And then I would give them something with lower torque that was actually more flexible and say, oh yeah, that one's different. And so they were feeling different things. And so when they come in to be fit and they say, well, I always play this weight, this flex, this idea, that's too confining because you can't push them out of their box and really find something better. And so that's kind of the philosophy that we took, is that you're not going to know. And I still this day, I won't tell you what I'm giving you until after. Then I'll tell you everything you want to know. But I want you to experience it. I want you to give me feedback. I like this. I don't like that. This feels like this. And I'll learn their language pretty quick and then give them what they want to feel and have it perform properly.
Amazing. So like really when they get fitted, they don't know what they're getting until the end, right? Like
I don't tell them.
Yeah.
I mean, they're good. It's getting, people are learning more about the shafts. They're getting a little smarter about it, you know, cause they investigate it, but that's what I want. I want you to have the shaft that's best performance for you, not necessarily what you're been told that's best for you or that you've just always thought because you read that this shaft does this. And so that fits me. That's usually what I hear. It's some, oh, can't you just send me? I've always been an XYZ, this and that. Just send me one that's like
that. Like the normal marketing for shafts though, right? It's like, oh, this shaft does X. And it's like, well, it might do that for somebody, but maybe not for somebody else, right? Like,
yeah, and I've found it very rare that what a player, any player, tour player or not, what they tell me they're fit in or should have is what they end up with. It's usually not. So it's probably
it down though. It's like, you know, a lot of people don't have that. They just half-ass it, or they think they know what they're talking about and they don't. And then they end up not being happy with what they got. Right. And then they throw it on that.
Yeah. And then they go on to the next shaft.
Yeah. The next shaft. Or 400 bucks.
I want people to be, I want them to play the shaft for a long time. You know, and obviously people swing changes. So when we catch that, we'll change out the shaft. But the, I want people to be able to play and have a club and use it and enjoy it. And then when they get another one, they can do the same thing. And some players just want the newest, latest stuff. And then we just refit it. And that happens a lot on the tour because obviously the companies want them to play the newest driver when it comes out. And then that just starts the process over.
That's cool. Like it just, I don't know, you got to do something special. And that's why I wanted, well, that's one of the reasons why I wanted you guys on the show, because I feel like more people need to know about TPT because it's like slowly gaining that momentum from behind. But, you know, what you guys are doing is just different, right? And special, and it's working.
Working.
And it's not selling a dream, you know, to somebody saying, oh yeah, it's like, I don't know. I just think it's cool what you guys are doing. And your shafts are amazing. Like they're...
Yeah, and they feel different. You've hit them.
Yeah,
they don't super feel high quality. Like a normal,
it's not like, yeah, they're not. No. They're not getting. It's like going to a restaurant or going to Burger King, right? It's like you're going, like if you're going to a fancy restaurant, you know what you get, and that's what you're going to. I
mean, yeah, and then as soon as people hit it for the first time, they go, "Wow, that felt different." The Korn Ferry player last 2 weeks ago was in here, and he came in. And he goes, "Hey, my friend just told me to come, and you know, I'm hitting the ball really straight and I really like my driver, but I'm just doing this because my friend, and hey, you know, if something's out there a little bit better." I said, "That's fine." I said, "That's great. We'll just see." And it was actually the first shaft I pulled out for him. And his father is actually his coach and his caddy stand there behind him. And he watched the first five shots. He goes, "That's the most incredible thing I've ever seen in golf."
The dad, I mean, or the coach?
The dad. No, the dad, and he's his coach too.
Yeah.
And also his caddy out there on the Korn Ferry. And I just sat there and I'm like, yeah, I see that pretty normally. You know, all of a sudden he was just hitting it. I mean, it wasn't like he was hitting his driver bad, his shaft bad, but when I put that shaft in there, his dispersion just got stupid straight. And then he goes out there and it just went right in the bag the very next day. And actually there was two players in here when they came in, and that's when I made the statement, well, you know, I don't know if you're going to get, you know, if I get used to it, I'll probably put it in there. And I'm like, you know, you're standing there and you watch that. It's clearly better. If you just hit one more fairway a day, what are you going to do? So it was a lot more than that.
It's the difference between winning and not winning.
I mean, right. You're going to be standing out there with this other shaft and you're going to want the other one. you're already used to it because it was better. And That's pretty funny too. And then actually he ended up playing in front of the player that I was out there with. And so I would get ahead and I thought, oh, this is a perfect time. He doesn't know I'm standing here. I'm going to video him on this hole. So I was standing behind him and I video him hitting a driver. I mean, it was a, you know, for him, a very poor swing, you know, it was a poor swing. I never even sent him I was going to send him the video. I was like, ah, I'm playing the TPT shaft, you know, kind of funny. And he made this terrible swing and he tried to save it at the end. And I mean, it doesn't look like his normal swing that I had just watched several times the day before. And I saw that video and then the ball just goes ripping straight down the right side of the fairway. It didn't even move. I was going, that's TPT, because it was a total save. You know, and I know what he was thinking because he'd said it in the bay the day before too, when he had missed one. He goes, wow, I thought that would go way off the tracks and just went down the fairway. And that happened right there. So at some point, I'll probably show him the video, but I don't want to. Maybe I'll show it to his dad or something. That's pretty funny.
Yeah, his dad would be like, yeah, thank God we did that.
Yeah, that was a pretty bad swing and he got away with it. It was cool. So I kind of got that in the archives. I won't bring that out, but because he probably wouldn't want to see that swing.
So. I almost feel like TPT is like the silver bullet that nobody knows it's like there. You know what I mean? Like a lot of people. Players know on the tour slowly and it's happening. But I think like the everyday player is like, if they just knew about it, like you guys would be blowing up. Like you'd be dominating right now because essentially you're solving the problem of what everybody really wants.
Certainly solved a big one for me. And that was, they definitely solved the one that number one, you what you get fit with, you'll play with. And number two,
forever.
If something happens, you can have it back. You don't lose that feel, you know? So you won't, you know, like forever. I mean, golfers, once you get a club that works, you sleep with it, right? It's like, you got to take care of it because something happens to it. It's never going to be the same. Well, that doesn't have to happen anymore.
Well, that's awesome. I'm really happy that you're on the show today. And if you guys can check out TPT Shafts if you haven't yet. Also check out John Sinclair. Just Google him. You'll see what you can do. If you're in the Texas area too, right? And he has time on his schedule, he might be able to do a training with you. But I mean, he knows his stuff, like seriously. And that
TV. Now make sure I'm a month or two out at this moment. So we got to make sure that we, if you want to come, just make sure and let me know way in advance.
Yeah, way in advance. Because he books very quickly. But thank you for being on the show today. And I really appreciate working with you guys at TPT and working with you especially. And yeah, thank you for being on the show.
All right. Thank you. And then come see me and we'll get that fairway wood fixed up.
Sure. Sounds good to me.
All right.
You take care.
All right. Have a great day.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Behind the Golf Brand Podcast.
You're going to beat me? The golf?
Stay connected on and off the show by visiting golfersauthority.com. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and leave a comment.
Golf is always more fun when you win.
Stay out of the beach and see you on the green.